Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe having a strong view on the future of the workforce operating model will unlock opportunities for you to scale. And you know, here to talk with me today about this topic is Tom. Tom is the CEO and co-founder of Finborn Technologies. He is also previously worked across financial services in the city of London and other places with the likes of UBS, Credit Suisse, and also RBS. So you're really excited to jump into this conversation with you today, Tom, and welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
Okay. So folks, as always, I like to give a bit of a prelude to the conversation and the topic before we jump into it. So as we all know, right now, we are going through a fundamental transformation in the way we work. Automation and thinking machines are replacing human tasks, which is ultimately changing the skills that fintech leaders, fintech companies are looking for in their people, right? No longer are you required to travel into the office 5 days a week. You're either fully remote or partially remote. And we know this, or these trends are here to stay, right? Recently, more than it was outlined in a research report, more than 25% of professionals that are seeking jobs are going to be remote in the UK, in the US and Europe, 25% by the end of 2022. That is a lot. And remote opportunities throughout the world will continue to rise through 2023. This isn't time to sit back and wait for events to unfold. You got to be prepared. You got to be prepared for the future and continue to drive your fintech forward along a path of profit. You need to understand what the future looks like, but what does that future look like? And, you know, I want to jump into this topic right now. I bring Tom into the conversation. He's got a plethora of expertise in it and set up his own business, also working at multinationals. But yeah, Tom, let's kick off the conversation with your view as an executive, as a founder. What lens are you looking at the shift in the workforce operating model? How are you viewing it right now? And what do you think your business needs to do in order to grasp whatever opportunities come off the back of it?
So I think in terms of how this is portrayed generally, right? As always in the media, you tend to read about executives want everyone to be in the office and the workforce don't want to be there. And I think you look at it saying, you know, CEOs tearing their hair out and their damn people just won't listen. Yeah. And I think that's it's the wrong way to look at the problem, right? Yeah. What we have is a workforce where if you are sort of self-sufficient, so if you are an individual contributor and you have lots of experience, the marginal utility of you traveling and commuting is just, it's not there, right? The only benefit you really get from being in an office is if you need to work with somebody on a problem and you have a whiteboard or you can have a coffee together. And it's to keep the important social connectivity, because even though we're having a conversation here, it would be very different if we're in person, right? When it's over Zoom, it's really good, but you sort of lose a, your brain just doesn't work in the same way. There's a depth perception that's missing and a sort of a connection that goes with that. The other part of the issue we have is that as you try to grow a business, you need to grow people. Mm. Everybody looks at it in a way where you can grow a business and not grow people, or it's sort of an afterthought. And for us, it is the most important consideration. So if you are a new graduate joining us, we mandate that you're in the office at least 3 days a week. And if you are training those people, you also have to be in at least 3 days a week, because otherwise you just can't give people the skills that they need to sort of be productive and get, I guess, the water cooler moments, the ability to connect with the other graduates on your training course is probably the most important part of it. Because as I always say to people, whatever you learn during your first few years of a technologist will be irrelevant 10 years later, other than the connections you made and the ability to actually think. They're the important bits. The rest of it, the technology, I mean, when I started, it was like right at the turn of the millennium, and almost everything I've learned there isn't really a language you use anymore. Like, I was on an amazing grad course at Morgan Stanley, but it was very dominant in Perl at the time. And I mean, nobody writes Perl anymore. So it's not like the technologies or the programming language of the time will remain. It's more the paradigms, the way of thinking, the problem solving and the collaboration are the things that are much more important.
No, I like it. And, if I was to categorize it, for me, we can go a bit further, right? We can look at 2030 and go, okay, what do the buckets potentially look like? Maybe there's a human comes first bucket where workers and companies seek out a greater meaning and relevance in what they do. Or the next bucket could be a company's care bucket, where corporate social responsibility is at the heart of what a company does, and obviously the benefits that it pushes out into not only its employees, but the wider public it's serving. There's still a lot to be said around capitalism, right? And corporate is king, right? And the bigger, the better. But having these massive buildings all over the world and dotted all over the world, is that still relevant when we look out to 2030 or even beyond?
Yeah. The thing I always worry about on that one is, having grown up as a farm boy in the countryside, I can tell you that the sustainability of everybody moving back to the countryside and living off the land isn't there. The services aren't there. The infrastructure you can bring to cities in terms of distribution and just light, power, sewage, like the basic utilities are much easier to do in large scale. So the idea that we won't have large buildings in large cities, I think maybe there's a better way, but I think it's more difficult than people paint it to be. But having said that, I think there will be and there already is a bit of a change in the thinking around what luxury looks like, right? Yeah. It used to be that luxury is you have a nice apartment in the city. Now it's actually you have a nice house with a bit of a space where you can work in your home office. And I think there'll be more evolution of that. And ultimately, that will lead to people being a bit more content, I think. Like the days of 5 days a week sitting on a train for an hour and a half to get to a crowded tube station to then, hate every second of it for a good portion of your life, I'd like to think are over. So,
yeah. And I think this goes to my fourth point, which is around innovation and innovation rules. How can we, as small businesses, big business, how can we innovate to make certain that we not only give our consumers what they want, but we also are able to bring in the talent that we need to build the businesses that we want, right? So with all of that, I guess for me, there's certain skills and critical skills that both you as a founder, executive, leader, depending on where you are in the organization, need to obtain. And also as an organization, you need to gather different types of skills. And through your experience right now of building up your business, also your past experiences, what do you see as the critical skills that you as an executive need to enhance going forward? And also you as a company leader and an organization need to build to benefit from the changing dynamics in the workforce?
You talk about innovation, and I always look at it as necessity is the mother of all invention, right? Which is, we suddenly got very good at working remotely, but we had to, right? And I think the thinking like that, like you go back to most innovation comes from times of conflict where necessity, you just have to innovate, right? Or times of high regulation in markets where the regulator has forced you to start changing what you do, or there's been an issue with a financial crisis. And as a result, people have to be more active in terms of managing their capital ratios and balance sheets. And it's not like suddenly we wake up one day and somebody's invented something. That's extremely rare. Normally it's an externality that causes that invention. And then as a result of it, people are very good at adapting to it. In terms of what that means for the skill sets you need, it's sort of two things. One is the adaptability, and the second is the ability to be wrong. And I think for a very long time, corporates have been very bad at building psychological safety and somewhere where you can be wrong. And I think if the one thing that being more remote will, we've noticed it already here, is that it forces a higher degree of precision in communication. So when we're in a room together, we can talk about some stuff, we can write out on a whiteboard, and we both can garner additional information from that interaction. And that was pretty good when you then go away and write some code and decide this is what we're going to end up with. And then 2 days later, you can go back and you see all the sort of micro iterations that you then miss when you're remote. And as a result, you need a higher degree of precision. This is the outcome I'm after. It needs to go into the specification. It needs to. So in some ways, it takes away some of what people are used to in Agile, but it actually adds what Agile really wanted in the first place, which is you don't just set off in a random direction. You know what the target is. Yeah. You're just willing to bring in changes along the way into your planning. And for us, I think that's actually been a huge benefit, because despite the fact that when the whole lockdown first happened for us, we noticed that there was a very large uptick in productivity. So people went home, and we noticed the amount of work we were getting through went up quite a lot. And then it went down. It literally fell off a cliff. And some of it was because people hadn't seen each other for such a long time. Having a conversation that resulted in a debate became almost something that people avoided. And then the other thing was that people sat at home all of the time, and they sort of went into despair slightly, right? Everyone was locked in their room for 6 months and like people got a bit despondent. So I think if you have something where you have the chance to reconnect to people and you have somewhere where you can have a controversial debate, then I think what you'll notice is overall productivity will go up as a result of people being in a more hybrid model.
So. Just to add to that, I mean, the skills that I see and I talk to my clients about are three around the LRC triangle: leadership, relationship, and communication. If all three of these points are pointing in an upward direction, actually you'll see, to your point, productivity going up. If one of them, for whatever reason, relationships or communication or leadership, is moving downwards, productivity is going to go down, right? And in a virtual world or virtual setting, or sort of a hybrid world, you need to have your finger on the pulse to really understand what's happening, why it's happening, and then obviously course correct. And they course correct, to your point, and I like what you said at the beginning of the show, where it's course correct. Maybe it's 3 days a week or 2 days a week, whatever it is, or 5 days a week, whatever it is, whatever mechanism there is, you need to make certain it's embedded in the culture and the fabric of the business, rather than sort of an ad hoc patchwork that springs up off the back of an ongoing problem, right?
And we got this completely wrong to start with, because we had this whole thing where we said we tried to go for almost exactly that. And we tried to summarize it as in, we expect everybody to be grown up and responsible for themselves, and therefore we're not going to sort of mandate policy at different levels. And actually what that resulted in was total ambiguity, and everybody was unsure of what to do, and it just caused anxiety we didn't need. So adding a bit more structure to it helped a lot.
Yeah, nice. And what did you, to go into that a bit more detail, what were you able to, after the mandates, let's say, the department heads obviously communicated that down to the teams. How long did it take for you guys to see that results were starting to change, because there was more direction, more leadership from the executive team?
The way we look at this is, so we have a very useful tool in the company for the relationship bit, which is we call it the tea bot or the coffee bot. And every week, everybody in the company gets paired with somebody at random. right? And you do that either virtually or in person, whatever works for you, but it's half an hour where you talk about anything. So I'll meet with somebody random every week and I'll talk about anything. And I get some of the best intel I get about how things are working from those meetings, right? Yeah. And I don't specifically use it for that. Normally, yeah, what it results in is people going, there's a very common question. One of them is, what would you recommend that I do in my career? And I tell people, like, don't be afraid to be wrong, or some other probably useless information that won't help them. But the thing that is very useful is it lets you see what people actually feel about the company, right? Because if you ask people, what would you change? That's when you find out what's really wrong. And that's what we try to do as much as possible. What would you make better? And we get really useful suggestions like, I'd like more functional style in our testing utilities to make it easier for me to describe business problems, right through to actually, you know, I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to be in the office or not. And mostly you can judge about whether something is working or not by the absence of queries on it. So if there's a lot of questions about what does this mean for me, you know that whatever you've implemented is probably garbage. Whereas if there aren't very many questions about it, it's either really working or nobody's heard it. But one of those is the extreme you're going to be in. So
nice. And, you know, as we look further afield into the fintech ecosystem, and obviously the workforce operating model is evolving. I don't think we're there yet. But in that context, what further value, how can fintechs continue to create value in the new world that we're moving into with new workforces, with new operating models, with different requirements from potential employers as they come into working in teams and distributed teams?
I don't think that really changes, right? I mean, your interaction with your customer sort of has to be the same regardless of the workforce model. And most of that has always been about listening, right? Yeah. So it's always been about, like, you develop a product, chances are you're wrong. People who are going to tell you are the people who are using it.
Yeah.
And if you've got the right mechanism and the right sort of culture to take that feedback, you'll be fine. And that's probably the thing, as I said, where the precision of communication and the rate at which you do it is incredibly important.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
How do you guys do that? I mean, we've mentioned communication a number of times already in our discussion. From an external perspective, how do you get that feedback from your clients to make certain that whatever direction you're going to go in is the direction that alleviates the current problems, maybe the future problems of your clients?
We look at what they do. And we are in the business of keeping books and records for financial firms, right? And providing very important calculations over the top of it that are at the heart of their business. So we don't look at what they do in terms of what's in their books and records, but we do look at the nature of the API calls that they make. So we know, you know, they call this API a lot, and then we look at how that changes over time. So we look and say, right, you've just started calling this API over here 250,000 times a day. Like, why? And we have that regular sort of, you know, we literally look at the stats and look at the anomaly detection and then say, what are you doing that's different about this? Like, what don't you like about our product? Because if somebody's calling an endpoint, we have clients who call our endpoints 30, 50 million times a day, and there's a change in the pattern, there's something we need to be listening to. So the data will tell you a lot. The other thing is structure. So we have design council or product council for our product where our clients can come along and tell us what they like and what they don't like. We have quarterly governance meetings with our clients so that they can tell us, you know, what's working, what's not working. We are very transparent about it. So every single API that a client ever makes, they can tell us whether we've met our service levels or not. So we literally provide them with the tools so that it's the exact same internal tools that we have to tell us what the SLAs were and whether or not we met it.
And as we wrap up this part of the podcast, what are the three bits of advice that you can give to fintech leaders out there that are building teams, that are building workforces and continue to scale up with the future operating model and the workforce operating model in mind? What are the things that they need to be thinking about now as they do that?
the one piece of advice I give is be very clear about what you expect from your engineering leaders specifically, right? And what I mean by that is, in the past, we've all had a habit of saying that the best developer will run the team, right? That's not what it really takes to run a team. What it takes is a very different sort of development team leaders now really need to be product owners. They really need to be the people who are open to feedback, where people can tell them their product isn't doing what it needs to do, and they know how to incorporate that, and they have a feeling for how the system is being used, right? So that's one part. Yeah. Separate, like, be very clear that that's your job, and I don't really care if you write code or not. If you do, great, but the job we need you to do is that one. Mm-hmm. Second one is know what good looks like, right? And what I mean by that is, if you want to do remote work, have a look at what GitLab do. Have a look at their employee handbook. They've been very clear. This is what's expected. This is what will happen in the first few days. And then the other thing is, your entire organization has to be garnered around bottom up instead of top down if you want to do this. And that is not an easy thing to do, right? Yeah. Everybody thinks that you can still have command and control in a workflow that's distributed, whereas you can't. Mm-hmm. You have to give the employees sort of a charter where they have the right to hold their manager to account, and they should expect this stuff from their manager, and their managers should expect it from them. And in that way, what you can do is build an organization where it becomes clear that the absence of communication isn't tolerable, because if you don't go for that sort of wholesale change, what you'll end up with is a very disengaged workforce who are filling in the necessary paperwork, but that really isn't productive. So,
no, awesome. So some really salient points. And, you know, now we get to the next part of the show, which is all smiles and what have you. Not that we haven't had smiles now, but, you know, I've always said, guys and girls that listen now, I'm still looking for a drum. I'm using my desk, my office desk right now. So if anyone's got a drum for me, I need one. So please send it through. You know my address, you know my details. But in the meantime, I will do the normal banging of the desk. And as the flash round comes up, there we go. Flash round is here. What is the flash round? The flash round is some more fun at the end of the show. I ask few questions, three sort of yes or no questions to Tom, and then I give him the hot seat and hand over the mic, and he's allowed to ask me a question, any question as it is. So here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. It's not too difficult, so don't sweat.
Let's go.
Exactly. Remote first or office? Or office first?
We're changing. We were office first. We're going to be remote first.
Okay. There we go. What's more important, talent or the location the talent is in?
Oh, talent by a mile.
Yeah.
It's not even close. Like,
yeah. What a silly question, Richard. Okay, here we go. And I'm asking this to everyone because I think it's a topic that's quite interesting right now, and you might have a view on it. So here we go. Is Web3 going to happen? Yes or no?
Yes, but not the way that people describe it now. I think have a look at what Sir Tim Berners-Lee is doing. And I think that's probably more the direction I hope we head in. So.
Okay, awesome. Good answers. All of them correct. There we go. So here we go. I give you the mic. And I know you've been pestering me now for a few weeks because you want to ask me a question. That's always the case, right? Here we go. So what would you like to know from Richard?
Why did you make the change to go into podcasts?
So I have been, you know, consulting for a number of years, 17 years as it stands, at, you know, some of the big banks, big corporates, also obviously smaller fintechs, startups and scale-ups. And what I realized there was, me and my team going in and doing project, the impact was great and it was meaningful, but it was constrained to that project or that client. So I wanted to have a bigger impact, and I wanted to have build a platform where I can do one to many, right? So I decided to set up a podcast. And in that, I also realized in the journey that there's change in financial markets and financial services. And all of the startups and scale-ups that were being built needed to be successful. And if they were successful, there would be greater accessibility to financial services by many. So I wanted to create a platform whereby I can dive into some of the knowledge from CEOs and founders and give it out to everyone else to democratize how fintechs are scaled up. And that's why I do podcasts. And you know, meeting guys like you and others is just the icing on the cake, right?
Good. Can I ask? Sorry, apologies.
Follow up.
Can I ask a quick follow up? Which is make a statement and then ask a question. In my experience, a lot of financial services covered in jargon that actually probably isn't that all that difficult when you get under the hood of it. How would you take a platform like this and then help with solving that problem?
So explain that to me. Platform, the podcast platform.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's about education and knowledge, right? So I've gone through about 10,000 hours worth of recording and chatting to people about various things. And what I find is simple communication and breaking down terminology or problems or obstacles is ultimately the best way of getting people's knowledge up, right? And yeah. I'll give you an example. I mean, that's very, maybe a broad statement, but I constantly get pinged on LinkedIn or on email, and people are saying to me, Richard, that episode, for example, someone in Vietnam actually dropped me a note a couple of weeks ago. He said, that episode with David Breer, is a branding expert, so I've got on the show, helped me. It helped me because I had no idea about X, Y, and Z when it comes to branding. I was like, okay, that's brilliant. That's helped him 1%. Likewise, I get other comments around specific information around regulation or specificities around scaling. And, you know, that's 2 minutes worth of information that I give out to the community allows those people to move on. It's about having simple communication, having a conversation and allowing people to digest it.
Yeah.
Okay. So a long answer to a short question. There we go. So cool. I mean, I always at the end of the show, I ask the guests to provide some details for the people listening so they can contact you and the business if they want to. So what's the easiest way to get in contact with you and the team at Finborn?
Literally go to our website, finborn.com, and it's a little thing on the bottom right that says contact us. So
brilliant. So really enjoyed the show today. Looking forward to seeing you guys go from strength to strength. And looking forward to maybe having a follow-up to this at a point in time.
Brilliant. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.